You know what? At work, we're usually way too busy, stressed out in the details of work that we don't really talk about anything personal, like not even at lunch.
Well,
it's actually a super stressful job.
You guys aren't me, because I...
No, you live in that. I know very little about any of my coworkers. Fuck. And vice versa.
I got... The people at work are so tired of me talking about myself, I had to start this podcast.
That's funny.
Which I shouldn't have smoked weed at before.
I know,
haven't done
me
that in
too,
a little
right?
while.
Let's do it.
All right.
We got Pilsner. Cool.
All right, I got the pill.
Yeah, I might reload before we start.
Dude, grab provisions. This isn't your first podcast. You know what you're doing here.
Right here.
We need a cooler is what we need.
Cooler's a nice...
But for realsies, grab yourself a couple beers.
Yeah. We also love it when he stops by. Please welcome our good friend, the very talented Reggie Watts.
Oh, yeah. No, I know Reggie Watts. Guy's been around forever.
Thank you very much. There's a lot of you guys worried about... it's Brown History Week is coming up. As a brown person, I understand difficulties of brownness. And there's a profoundness to this brownness. And I think that by the year 2000, at some point, we will have answers to why brown is so hard to get down with. This is a song that I wrote about brownness. It's if you like anything that you enjoy, then you'll probably find this palatable. So let's check it out.
To the I Never Want to Be Young Again podcast. That, if you guys haven't checked out Reggie Watts, that is Reggie Watts. I am here this week with Geoff.
Jeff.
Intern Brad, back after a long sabbatical.
Hey, guys.
How was Africa?
It was cold.
Yeah, cold. Yeah. If you have not already know this, go check us out on the ineverwantabeyoungagain.com. Email, ineverwantabeyoungagain@gmail.com. We love getting your mail. Facebook, I Never Want to Be Young Again podcast. And download the Stitcher app, and then you can take us around everywhere. For the youngins who have listened to at least one episode, and my most listened to episode, checking the stats, episode one.
Wait, which one's that?
The first episode, not the intro episode, which we're going to re-record.
And not the lost episode.
No, actually, that's fine. I'm going to re-listen to that, actually. Okay. Episode number one, which had a friend of the podcast, Joel. Joel, welcome to the podcast. Woo!
Hello, folks.
So, it has been, what has it been, like 33 episodes since you've been on?
I'm impressed with your work ethic, man.
Oh. I get together with my buddies and get drunk with microphones. It's not work ethic.
Yeah.
It's an excuse to party.
Exactly. Well, count me in, man.
And so, yeah, if you guys haven't already listened to episode one, please listen to it. Joel takes his dick out in the stories, not in the studio. He wasn't wearing any pants. And you know what? Last time I saw Joel was at my birthday. He came to... another friend of the show's, the Dreadnoughts concert. You have a good time?
Oh, I'm pretty sure I did.
Yeah,
you're pretty sure you did. You were.
I remember a lot of the highlights.
Well, you showed up at our hotel room drunk at like 7:30.
Because I had golfed that day and had like a few beers. And
you don't need to explain yourself to me. And
that's the point of a podcast.
But you made it. Yeah. You made it home okay, right?
Yeah. After a bit of an adventure, end of the night, getting on a random bus, which I like to do sometimes, and then of course there. This nice lesbian couple that gave me a beer, so I had that with them, and then woke up in Richmond in a hotel room and worked on getting home from there. And ended up charging my phone at a casino, winning $50, picking up a spare key from a buddy, and then getting home by like 6 p.m. and
6 p.m.
heading straight for the couch.
The next day.
That's basically the hangover five.
Yeah.
I've lost myself. Yeah.
But you've recovered since then, right? Because we're now a full week.
Oh, heck yes.
I know you're in your mid-30s and shit.
Yeah, I made sure to take it easy last night.
Lots of saunas?
Oh, man. Well, a sauna really figures into my main story today.
Yeah?
I knew that sauna would change my life, and it kind of did.
You had a sauna that changed your life?
Yeah, it's usually my happy place. I try to go there four times a week at least. And
and you meditate and shit there, I'm sure,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, meditate,
you're
stretch,
big on that.
Just all the sauna stuff. And I'm lucky enough. Like in this apartment building, no one else seems to use the sauna, so I usually have it to myself in the morning.
A lot of people using it that first day they live there, and then that's it.
I guess so, but yeah, I'm getting my Stratafee's worth, man, making sure of it. My goal is to use it more than anyone else in the building. I think I'm already there, though.
Yeah, good
or
job.
In the complex, so.
You putting lines on the wall?
Joel's going to put placard up. Joel's sauna.
No. Actually, I do mark it in the calendar.
Yeah, you do?
Just to kind of keep track of it, yeah. I figure you can't improve something unless you measure it, so I've been doing that with a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
Like with my piano practice or going to the gym, wow. I just have it all on the counter, and then I do a total at the end of the month, and I just really find myself building momentum. Each month is getting, I'm doing more of it. So.
Oh, good for you. Not enough hours in the day.
Wow. No, no, especially these days. yeah, but yeah, it's been a hell of a weekend. Yesterday was like a pretty big inflection point for me, and yeah, my life is going to be a little different now.
Wait, well, what's an inflection point?
It's kind of like a major shift in direction.
Okay. Am I going to need a dictionary for this?
Google right here.
He was looking inside. Good. He was getting spending some time with Joel and figuring
like
out
that.
About Joel.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't burp in the microphone on the show, but what did you figure out about Joel?
Well, it's a long story, so I'll just start at the beginning. Yeah, it seemed like 5 days in one yesterday. I got up. I had some wine with a friend the night before. Did a little bit of mushrooms and was like, you know, just in a good state from that. I hadn't done mushrooms in a while.
The inflection.
And,
dude, I did mushrooms with you like a couple of weeks ago. So when you say a while.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of a half microdoser, so it was a while for me.
But really do mushrooms is what you're saying. Not like what we did, but...
Yeah, no, I like to just have the small amounts. It's enough to kind of inspire, but not... and to give energy, but not to... and to change your thinking a little bit and look inwards. I don't know.
Do you find that's beneficial?
Yes, and so does science, apparently. Like, psilocybin or whatever is the only drug that cures depression even a year after they've taken it. People...
Wow.
Are a little less depressed.
I heard about this microdosing LSD thing, and so I tried it. And at first, for the first like week or two, man, I felt so inspired. And this is like a level of it you can't even really perceive. You know, it's like 1/10 of like a normal dose. And you know, I tried that for about 2 weeks, and I just felt amazing. Colors are brighter, like everything's more beautiful. And then crippling depression for another month.
Oh, so highs and lows.
Excuse me. Yeah. I don't know what happened. Eventually, like, I hit the wall and I, yeah.
Well, you hit a wall because you were high for, like,
no,
weeks,
no,
right?
No, no, no. You're not high. You don't even notice it.
But you're still firing off those receptors.
Yeah, it's doing
right?
something to your brain.
You're still firing off those receptors.
But mushrooms is actually effective.
It is, but I don't, it's not something I do constantly. I'll you know, for a month I'll have a little extra and then I'll take a month off because I don't want to be too dependent on one thing like that.
Okay.
Because it's still kind of a shortcut past some of your woes. It can give you inspiration, but you know, what I've learned about myself, because I used to get a lot of depression when I was younger and I still feel it sometimes, is that it's often just kind of your body like physiologically trying to tell you something needs to be changed in your life.
You need to take mushrooms, say.
See, yeah, that's like taking Advil and then injuring yourself because you don't feel the pain. But
right. You know what, and I'm sorry, actually, I shouldn't say it like that because there is some like backup to your point. There's a few, like the spirit molecule, that book like touches on that a bit. Yeah. And there is something to be said for it. So I don't mean to make it a joke.
Of course. The nice thing is that like Joe Rogan and Tim Ferriss and all, you know, they're huge into this kind of revolution that's happening in the study of the effects on depression and everything like that. So I think we were on such a good path in the 70s, I think, with the LSD studies, and then they had to make it Schedule One for some stupid reason. Yeah. I guess the pharmaceuticals don't really want people to have an easy cure for depression, right? Yeah.
But they're researching that now, though. Works. Like, they're actually looking into the MDMA for PTSD, yeah. And that's a lot of acronyms, and LSD and
MDMA was legalized for prescription.
Was it?
Yeah.
When?
Here.
Just now.
I'm not sure when, but if you Google
that's
it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Good for
you. Can do micro doses of MDMA for counseled visits. So you sit there and you work through whatever.
Couples therapy is starting to do it a bit, which honestly.
No, it makes sense.
It makes sense,
it drops,
doesn't it?
Barriers. It's
drops your ego.
Yep.
That's the main part. Yeah, your ego just kind of disappears.
I might have this wrong, but I think Sam Harris was on the Joe Rogan, and he did. He talked about it a bit. No, it wasn't Sam Harris. It was some other dude.
Well, Sam Harris does talk about that stuff.
Oh, maybe it was.
But
maybe
I think he's more of a he's trying to get those effects through meditation.
Mm.
He's
not give me the drugs.
He doesn't have anything against them, I don't think, but. I might be totally wrong on this, but I figured he's kind of more of like he's working through the meditation thing. Apparently, he made a new meditation app that's supposed to be amazing. I think Tim Ferriss is talking about
it. We're getting sidetracked.
Okay.
You had a revolution.
Yes. But it all started with that. I really had figured out in the last few weeks, because of a breakup, I decided to jump into piano like four times as much. You know, I was doing like 4 hours a week, 5 hours a week, and now I'm like, no, I want to make that like 4 hours a day. Really go on this and see where it goes.
As a crutch, that's a good one to go for.
Yeah, though. And I got a keyboard that I brought. Well, I'll have to play on the podcast sometime. And so that I could take it out to take it around and start actually playing music in front of people and just getting over that, you know, just getting more comfortable with that, using that nervous energy to really put it into my music instead of letting it strengthen my ego and make me worry about messing up.
Oh.
But you know what? That's a good... because. It's a good exercise in just not only like your own willpower to do something that's hard to do. Like I used to like doing karaoke just because I like being the center of attention, but I didn't think I was good at it. But it's even going out there doing public speaking, doing a public performance like you're talking about doing, just pushing yourself to do that is a great exercise.
And same with things like this podcast, right? It just takes you out of comfort zone enough that you've got to just, you know, use that nervous energy.
Oh, right? I'm super detached from my fan base. So like, you know, that's...
Fair enough, yeah. If I'm performing in a room, people, I don't know, a big mistake wouldn't go unnoticed maybe, but so that plan worked out, though. Every time I break up I get more into music. So, like, at this rate, I'm going to get addicted to breakups if I'm not careful, right? Because they always change my life huge.
You mean, you don't say you're addicted to breakups. You're slang pussy. There's two ways you can spin that, buddy.
Fair enough. Got to use the right terminology.
In what kind of way have you been getting into music? Like you said, playing piano like this time around. But before, was it listening or was it trying new
classical
genres?
Training before. So Royal Conservatory, have a great teacher. So like I said, last big breakup 4 years ago or so, I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm going to buy, I bought a piano to deal with it instead of just like looking at the bottom of whiskey bottles too much. And and I got a great teacher, and then that just, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. I played piano for 6 years when I was a kid, and I advanced pretty quick. I was always kind of a natural at it. I just never practiced, and I was bloody afraid of my teacher at the time. and that fear would make me procrastinate.
Are you a little bit afraid of the teacher you have now? Isn't she like a stern Russian lady?
She's
it's
a commie,
not
right?
Not fear, it's respect, and she's an amazing lady. I'm going to be... going to her for the rest of my life, anyways, I went through classical training grade 8 and 9 and working on level 10, but I'm like, okay, with this keyboard now I want to go to you know, I do recitals for people once in a while, but that's just like, that's not the same as a live performance. You're not reading your audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not, you're working on something and trying to shut out the world and just play your song and like as best you can. And it's only like one or two songs you're working on. So I want to get more into the, just being able to just entertain.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it worked out. I brought it to the island the first weekend. Like I had this epiphany on a Saturday, ordered on Amazon. It came by Monday. And I was off to the races, brought it to the island, played with three musician friends there who've, you know, they're doing okay. They've been on the radio and everything. Like, they're really inspiring to me. And so I started jamming with them. And then, yeah, I was just, like, it was just one of those decisions where I'm like, how did I not do this before, right? And then, yeah, so.
Very inspiring. That's awesome. Yeah, you go for it.
Well, yeah, so I was feeling really inspired yesterday, and I just, I don't know what it was. I was playing for about 4 hours of piano, and I just got into it more than I've ever gotten into it before.
Okay.
And I just got super emotional, and like, I don't know, I was playing a Chopin Nocturne song, and I just like all of a sudden just kind of like broke down. I just like felt more emotion than I've felt in a long time. And actually kind of like, I don't know, it sounds pretentious, but I kind of started like sobbing for a bit. I'm like, I don't know what I had to get out. And I sobbed for like 15 minutes. But
piano, like soulful piano music, has that effect on people.
Yeah, I just felt like a connection to someone who's been dead for like 150 years. I'm like, oh, I think I know exactly what you meant with this song. And I could like feel it.
So in a combination of a...
Because I've been working on the song for like 6 months and I'm just like, just...
Are you nailing the song? Are you...
I'm getting there on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll play it.
But this later, this but time when you were playing, when you were like, it was just going, it was flowing, it was going well and hitting, hitting a nerve somehow.
And I don't know what I learned from that, but it was just, it was, and, I and just learned empathy better.
And I've did you take a little like bit of mushrooms at the time as well?
No, but I had the trace, because I had them the night before. That's what I like about them. They, for the next few days,
they hang out for a bit.
Creative or slightly different perspective on things.
Like a vitamin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I, the best vitamin ever. And so, and then all sorts of, like, the weather started changing, and I was playing for Elise, and I could hear, like, the neighbors would come into the hallway sometimes to listen, and so I knew I had an audience. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to give it to this audience, and I played the best for Elise rendition I've ever done, just slow and just, like, just gave it my all, and it started to hail, even though it was sunny, just as I started playing it. I'm like, wow, this is weird, man.
That's cool.
And this is only the beginning of the story, so I... After all that, I'm like, okay, great. And now I'm going to work out the red wine from last night by going to the gym and doing some just doing some uphill hiking on the treadmill, just, you know. So I powered through that for 20 minutes and then went to the sauna, my happy place.
Yeah.
And there's this dude in the sauna. I'm not going to mention any names.
In your sauna?
No. one of the gym.
Yeah, first, you know, I'm like, get the fuck out. But no. how did you know about this? But he had actually been at the complex for 2 years and he'd never used the sauna once. I'm like, oh man.
Oh.
He's like, I just didn't really realize how nice it was. Like, so our conversation started off with me touting the health benefits that have been found about the sauna, of course. Like, you know, all cause mortality going down by 35%.
What?
They found that in a study over a 20-year period of Eastern Europeans, that no matter what other factors they have in there, you die from anything less, 35% less for cancer, heart
across
attack,
the board.
Across the board.
So this is
that was Rhonda Patrick. You can listen to her on Joe Rogan.
I've seen her. Yeah, I saw her on Joe Rogan.
Yeah, very support. Very smart lady.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when you're hotboxing it.
You know what? That's something I'd be willing to test, but maybe not every day, because then my I don't know how my quality of life would do.
Anyways, but, go on.
Yeah, so after that, we started talking about ayahuasca, of course, because that happens. He had been on a 10-day Peruvian ayahuasca thing.
Oh, really?
And so we had this great conversation about that, and this thing called Cambo, where you get, like, poisoned by a frog, pretty much.
What?
Yeah. And it makes you kind of puke out all the bad stuff.
That's terrifying.
Your body's reacting
really?
To it. Yeah, it's really diluted. Frog poison. So,
you know, I'm gonna
have to try that one day too.
But I'm gonna make a quick comment about both ayahuasca and the frog thing. There's a comedian who was on if you ever listened to The Crab Feast with Jay Larson and Jay Larson and Ryan Sickler, and the guy came on and he had addiction, and somebody said, well,
you know, he went to programs, he went to, you know, rehab and stuff, trying to get over these addictions. And his buddy's like, listen, we're going to get you over this, man. We're going to send you to Mexico and you're going to do hallucinogens to get over your addiction. Because I think it was like coke or something. And he's like, huh? And he did the frog thing, whatever that's called, and ayahuasca. And I think like two other, over 4 day period, he just did like a bunch of hallucinogens, clean and sober ever since. Because the insightfulness of it, he gets over stuff, he remembers stuff. Because ayahuasca is like a woman, Mother Ayahuasca, and the frog is like a guy. For whatever reason, it's got a male persona. And when you do, like one day you'll do ayahuasca and one day you'll do the other and stuff like that. And there's doctors and everything, they're monitoring you. And you figure out something about yourself. Because let's face it, addiction, like an intoxicant, is making up for something probably broken inside of you. So this helped you reflect on it. So it's kind of interesting that this guy's, you know, those two hallucinogens, which I think are pretty specific to South America. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in them. I want to go on an ayahuasca ceremony
this year.
After Dan was talking about it
yeah.
on whatever episode he was on.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing it this year for sure. And have more reason to now because of where the story goes. We continue talking about that, and then it got into the discussion, got into music. I forget how, and I told him about what I was kind of doing with piano and how I was trying to, and how that I was supposed to do a podcast the next day, and I was originally going to talk about, you know, religion and such, but I was feeling kind of inspired to bring up the recent changes in my musical passions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was last night, you know, I was told him about like I was going to a going away party and I was going to bring some mushrooms and my keyboard and just play for people. And, you know, the best way to make your audience enjoy the show is give them some mushrooms, of course.
So, dose the audience.
Yeah. It's perfect. That's a good strategy, I think. So, yeah. And he's like, this is unbelievable. And I'm like, in two years or so, I wanted to go on Craigslist. After I finish my level 10, go on Craigslist and look for bands who just want a keyboardist so I can start performing at different gigs. And so the guy, he's like, this is kind of a crazy coincidence. He's like, but I'm in a band, and I'm not going to say any names again, but he's like, and we're splitting up this year later on after our final album. He's like, I was wanting to do a new project. We were kind of rock. I was thinking more of like a hip-hop style, and I needed a keyboardist.
Wow.
And I'm like,
really? And you just bought a keyboard?
Did we just start?
And it's just perfect.
And I'm like, I'm Joel. And he's like, yeah, and he told me his name. And we're just like, wow, this is happening. And I'm like, he's like, which unit are you? And I told him, and he's like, wow, I'm right across the courtyard. We can, from our balconies, we can chat, you know, like across the courtyard.
All the neighbors probably love that.
So you guys are naked in a sauna. And was anybody else picturing him naked?
Well, yeah, it's Joel's sauna. He can be naked.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He didn't know his bandmate.
It's an important thing to do in a complex, you know, where word doesn't ever get around. So, yeah, you're supposed to be naked.
Everybody check out Joel's new band, Dicks Out.
I'm taking suggestions, so I'll write that down.
So what genre did you settle on?
Hip-hop.
I haven't decided that yet, but his agent, like, he's a semi-successful band.
Oh, like that.
And
he's
the lead. And anyways, so... Yeah, his agent told him for the next album, he's like, do about for the first year, just work on 20 songs and don't perform. So that's the plan. So I just right away, it was like a paradigm shift. I'm like, okay, this is it. I'm like, I'm not gonna do my level 10 next year. I'm gonna continue working on theory. I'm gonna make this into like my full time job because this guy's got a lot of experience. I don't, so it's catch up time.
Yep.
So I'm gonna be doing this at least like 5-6 hours a day. I got new equipment today. Like a little analog and digital keyboard,
nice.
And I got some software. And
is somebody you can learn from, right? Like you're going into a genre. Like I know you've listened to hip hop, but I don't think you're like I would never assume that it's your thing.
Yeah, no, I think it's something that can give me a lot of creative freedom. I think.
Well, and plus, it's just fun.
And
fun
I
want to do something creative,
mix
right?
Jazz piano in there. That's that's the goal. Oh, so I'm gonna start. I'm gonna move from classical study straight into jazz study, and that's gonna be a big part of my quote unquote work day on this. And then working on the theory, and then working on creating new music. And when I go to South America, I have this setup that I got is very travel friendly. So any inspiration I get from there, I'm just gonna make music the whole time. He'll give me some sample tracks, and I'll just make. I'll work on it. I'm just going to make like 10 songs for every sample. Just get like a bunch of crap riff out there. Just start to
shotgun
learn.
Blast. Just do as much as you can, exactly. Right? Just no idea is a bad idea. Just fucking get it done.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I booked voice lessons.
Are you going to rap? I'm so excited to
well,
see
Joel
no,
like, rap. It might be like more like a bit of R&B in there. I don't know. The guy's got a good voice. And so if I'm going to accompany it all, I just want to have that confidence to do that. Or, you know, and part of the dream, that's why I had Reggie Watts on there. I kind of like his style. I'd like to be able to also just work on being a one-man show for doing parties or weddings or something and just be able to...
Just like sampling and looping. And
sampling, looping, and playing, so and then great. Throwing in like... Because this keyboard is a really nice weighted keyboard. You can get some good... Like, everyone was pretty pleased with it last night. You can get some really good convincing sound out of it, like...
It's variable. You've got a lot of variants you can do, like different sounds. Mm-hmm. You can just download different.
But it's, you know, so much different sensitivities, mm-hmm. and like classical training really teaches you how to use that for good effect. So
yeah,
I can mix that in with jazz and, you know, and with 8-bit.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of 8-bit stuff.
Oh man,
it's that video game nerd inside
so
you.
Chunky, I love it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I have my, you know, different inspirations. Things like Broken Bells, I love their sound, or, you know, just anything like that. So it's really exciting. My life is just completely different now.
You know what? And this is one of the things I love about you, Joel, is you you don't think small, and you love to have a project. You love to have a hobby or a project or something to work on, and I know you'll put your all into it. I can't wait to see you up on stage.
You know what? I can't wait to hear about some of your musical influences when you research this or work at it. I know you're an encyclopedia on most things, and I would not have guessed hip-hop music was going to be one of them, but I can't wait to hear about that, like, when you know more than I do in a week.
yeah like right now there's, you know, it's ground floor. There's really, I don't know anything about how the project's going to go, but we're just going to bounce ideas. It doesn't have to be, I don't think any like real specific genre.
Yeah,
and he's done so much rock before, like we could probably do a bit of that too, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, so far you've got two guys, and as you build like the rest of the band, you'll have influences from all sections of them, mm-hmm. and you'll learn something from each of those people that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there'll be ways that you guys will play well together, right? And you're like, okay, yeah, no, that jives, and you know, that's how a band melds together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be
great bands. even if the band is a complete failure, or we don't jive well, or whatever, that's, you know. The main thing here is that like my life path like has shifted that way, and I'm gonna work on this no matter what, even if I had to do it more on my own. I was planning on doing it in a couple years, but then this opportunity presented itself now. You know, if you put it out there like really what you want in something like this, and like I was already taking the actions. It seems like the universe will provide. Yesterday was just a crazy day. I had a neighbor later on in the evening text. He's like, I've been working on some guitar songs. He's like, do you want to jam sometime? Like,
oh nice.
Same day.
That one,
like,
that heard
what the
you
hell
all.
Is going on today?
Well, you know what, that beats the day job, right? Like, to do anything.
Well, I'll be doing both. I'm still going to be doing the day job, but
of course,
I don't get that meaning, you know, that same sense of purpose that I do from music. So, and right. I'm lucky enough to have the time to really put a lot of time and, you know, work into this.
Well, working on something that is creative, like it's a creative outlet that just, and you've been working on you're crafting your own skill on the piano, and I've seen it over the last 4 years. When did you start doing lessons?
Yeah, it was about three and a half years.
You've been
ago.
Musical. You're kind of a dick that way. You play guitar a bit. You play drums a bit. You play piano. I think I saw you pick up my mandolin and like play something, and I was like, I almost slapped you. You know,
I'm very I'm very basic on guitar and stuff. But when you know music theory, you can work with that. Yeah. And that's why this is also a kind of a springboard for that. I'm going to be studying, like I'm challenging a course on this. I've already got my jazzology book I'm ready to go through, but it's thick stuff.
Nice.
And, and I'm working on my level 8 theory. So I'm a little behind on that in my development, but I've been making up for lost time. I was already studying that like 2-3 hours a day before this event happened, right? Like, so
it just lines up. It just lines up in kind of an emphasis where you're already working that way.
Mm-hmm. So I've never really had a day like yesterday where it just seemed like it kind of felt like out of a movie, you know? Yeah.
Joel, you're a funny kind of guy, I gotta say. You're the kind of guy that when you're going with your bros down to like snowboard and party for a weekend, put on your favorite self-help book audiobook on the ride
oh,
up.
Yeah, that was a good
that book.
That
was actually
fantastic. No, that was really good. No, we listened to it. Yeah,
it was really good. But
Wait,
just that motivation.
Fine art of not giving a shit.
Fuck.
No, that's a good one. But
that's the
lot
one
more
we went
into
to Rebel
12 Rules for Life. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See, I guess every time on a snowboard.
Yeah.
Trip,
there you go.
No, and that's what
I love.
Time
to get
you.
Actually, makes for a good ride. Like for car ride, like road trip music. That's good.
And no, it was. It actually later on, I checked it out later. But it is funny that you that's your go to, that's your go to, which is it's a neat personality type to be on so much of the time.
See, I'm not stubborn about. I guess I'm not too stubborn about beliefs. I try to be very fluid on that, especially these days. But I'm stubborn about certain decisions, and so when I started day trading, I'm like, I'm going to make this happen. And it's not the kind of thing where your friends and family are like, yeah, you should totally do that. Get in the stock market. Yeah. There was,
I saw Wolf of Wall Street do it.
Like, what the hell are you doing?
You got to be motivated within yourself enough to fight through that nobody's going to motivate you.
Yeah, so I became a self-help freak back then, and that kind of stuck. But I think self-help has matured a lot. Back then, it was a little more of a industry where, just people were writing books about just positivity and, just things like The Secret, where visualize and it will come. Parts of that I think are logical for real life, but some of it's just silly. Like you have a genie in the universe that's there to do your every bidding. Like, no, that's not how it works, right?
Well, you're a self-motivated guy, and that's why you take something like day trading and make it your job, right? And succeed at it. I assume you're okay. I mean, you always have groceries and stuff, and
yeah, it pays the bills and it gives me some spare time, and
that's because you
spent
wake
a lot
up
of
at
spare
like
time back in the day playing video games and things like that, and I just was never feeling great about it. But as soon as the more of that time I put into music, it just feels exactly like the right thing. So,
but you, what time do you wake up in the morning?
5:30.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah, that's
selling cars. I don't have to be up before 7:38.
Hold up, but you get up at 5:30 so that at 6 o'clock you can be right there at the open market.
At 6:30, there's trades that happen before the market opens.
Oh, okay. But then,
and sometimes there's opportunity there because a lot of people don't get up that early.
Yeah. So, but you wake up at 5:30, but then what, you do that for like an hour or two?
Usually a couple hours, and then I keep an eye on it throughout the day. And
I was thinking that it'd be a great opportunity to just go back to bed.
There was a time there where I was doing that whenever I could.
Yeah, when you were playing video games,
and
like that. I don't know. I'm assuming
partying too much and getting a little despondent about my purpose in life. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely like a negative rut to fall into.
Yeah,
when you have like all the time in the world and just nothing productive.
Video games can be fun, but it's
video games.
It doesn't build you up.
No, and I've gotten really sensitive to that. Through maybe meditation, yoga, mushrooms, but I really know when something's not making me feel good.
But you still have the best video game system I've ever seen. I'm just going to say. VR shit.
Yeah, and I ruined video games for myself. I got that PC for VR. I've always been a PC nerd, a PC gaming nerd.
So was intern Brad, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's great stuff, but like this PC could handle any game, and Steam, I have like over 100 games on Steam. Most of them I haven't played through. And the paradox of choice just really came into play. It's like, okay, you play if a game has like a 5-minute boring section, like, oh, I gotta move on to something else, And I just
that instant gratification sort of.
Yeah. So I just don't find them as entertaining anymore because I'm just like, oh, I just want to. If I'm not shocked or amazed every moment of it, then there's something else to shock and amaze me in the library. So.
But then again, like just stepping away from video games gives you that kind of energy and focus to put onto something else. Like, because video games can be hard. To beat a hard game, that takes discipline, that takes a focus, that takes a practice and a skill. But I mean, if you put that sort of energy towards playing piano or fitness or fucking anything else that's productive, learn a fucking language, you know?
Yeah, and I dabbled with the idea of learning the language, but
speaking of which, I spent way too much time on Skyrim. But yeah.
We've all had games like that. With me, it was Witcher 3.
Oh, yeah?
Amazing game. Incredible. Yeah.
Was that a PC thing? I
can't keep up.
No, it's on
any
Xbox
of these games.
Well.
I've never heard of
and PlayStation.
Hmm. You know what? If you don't mind, I'm gonna hard segue out from video games to because you'd called me a few weeks ago and you said, Trevor, I want to do another podcast, and I was thinking of like trying to get you back on the show anyways, and you wanted to talk about something that I've always known about you, but we've never talked a lot about, and it's something I think a lot of people might have misconceptions. Why don't you go ahead? The what you wanted to talk about was?
Yeah, well, I was born and raised a Jehovah's Witness, and I do think that kind of really shaped who I am.
Now, for anybody who doesn't say they didn't really was familiar with what Jehovah's Witnesses are.
Well, I know
are.
It was those people that have the magazines. What was that? The Watchtower? That's them?
Yeah.
I think that's all I know. That's like my only interaction.
They knock on your door.
I've never had that.
It's a religion run by smart people. Okay. The reason they have the Watchtower is so that all of the congregations around the world are studying the same thing every weekend.
Oh.
You get this global.
So they're all on the same page. They all receive the same propaganda.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's that like?
But, well, let's talk about what are the main things people, like, know about Jehovah's Witness, and that's it. Like, I'm sure there's levels.
They know how to really act like they're not home on Saturday mornings when people are knocking.
Because spreading the religion is a big part of it.
Yeah, that's why Witness is in the name. They believe that that's the best way to make up for pretty much when Armageddon happens. People who haven't learned the message, their blood is on our hands. And so the most important thing we can do is go out in what they call service.
Okay.
And yeah, and knock on doors and just hope to God that cute girl from school doesn't answer. But sometimes that
right.
happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like when you're young, you're born into it. Your parents were into it. Obviously your family was into it. And then, so you don't know another way.
Well, I do now, but
how normal did it feel at the time?
Didn't feel normal. Like kids were at school make sure of that.
I guess that's where you get the exposure of a different culture to your own, right? Is when you start going to school.
Well, yeah. And yeah, as soon as, because, you know, they can't keep you out of school. They try to keep you out of worldly contact, right? It's very us against the world because they think the world is ran by Satan. And, you know, only but 7 million people out of 7 billion, you know, that's not a very high percentage, but they're the ones that God has kind of
found God's true message. Every religion thinks that of themselves, right? Like this section here, we've got it right, and everybody else is kind of silly.
Yeah. A lot of people like to call it a cult, and it does have a lot of cult similarities, and it is weird to be in because there's kind of a contrived happiness that everyone puts on Stepford Wives style. But there are benefits to the religion in certain ways, like that sense of community, and people really are very helpful in things like in disasters or, you know, like in Rwanda there that they were helping out their fellow citizens and.
It's a very Christian thing to do.
Yeah.
I like missionary work, you know, I mean, I don't do it like that, but I mean, I like that people do that. I think their heart's in the right place and they want to help people. And I think so long as they do it without being too preachy, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And yeah, so a lot of their intentions are good. The main problem I have with it is the lack of choice and the use of shame in order to punish, which I think is not very effective.
Because the first thing I noticed was I felt guilt when you said that their blood is on your hands. So you're being guilted into saving people so that you don't feel guilty later.
Yeah, they use a lot of really good psychological tools or tricks. Like, you know, at meetings, what they do is an elder will give a talk or a ministerial sermon for 45 minutes or so, and then you do the Watchtower study, and you're supposed to study beforehand. Ugh. And I didn't really enjoy that. Because it's the same thing again and again, just worded differently. Oh. You know, they really drill it into you. You're just going, and you're going through the Bible. Everyone's kind of lined up worldwide, going through the Bible, where every week you read a certain amount of verses and you give a talk on it. And so by getting people to, like I think in the Korean POW camps, they learned this too.
What's that?
Maybe that's where they got the tip, but when people, like when soldiers were supposed to write anti-U.S. propaganda, you know, they would actually start believing it. Just writing something down, or they'd have to say it out over the radio to the other inmates or the other prisoners. And so what they do with Jehovah's Witnesses is, you have to answer.
So you're in a meeting, and
you raise your hand, and you know, I guess you get some social credit when you answer.
Because it's about status a little bit, kind of a caste system.
Who's pleasing God the most? I actually remember when I was moving up the ranks, I was a mic boy, which is kind of fun.
Wait, a mic boy?
Yeah, it was nice because I wouldn't have to sit through every meeting. I could
Carry the microphones?
Yeah, on these poles.
Oh, that's actually what that is.
Yeah, so someone raises their hand, they call them out, and I just go and I hold the mic
for them. You're a boom mic operator.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was fun because it was something to do instead of sitting there listening to the same shit again and again. But yeah, people convincing themselves because they have to answer.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for what it did for my public speaking, because I would have to give talks probably 2-3 a year.
At what age?
It would just be about like 6 verses of the Bible. Starting when I was like 7 or 8, I think.
Oh, really?
Pretty young.
And you're doing public speaking?
At 7
yeah.
or 8?
Yeah, so that's a good part of it. They kind of get that. Because I remember when I was at my buddy's wedding and supposed to speak, like they asked me to do a speech, but they asked on the party bus day of the wedding, like last minute. I'm like, oh shit, yes, I guess. And then I was just feverishly coming up with a speech, and I was sweating.
Joel
like
didn't
a
think
dog.
Of anything else for the next 24 hours.
And I'm at the at the head table here with like an empty glass of wine and a full plate. I just had no appetite, just like, oh no, and just like so nervous about it. And then I got up there, and it wasn't like just standing at the table. There's a raised balcony, and you're looking out across this outdoor wedding. So it's like you're definitely the center of attention.
You were giving a king speech.
I was.
You're on a balcony overlooking all the people? That's a powerful position.
Well, it was similar to what it was like in a Kingdom Hall, I suppose. But
And this clicked in as something that you've done before.
I just stepped up to the podium, and I had my phone ready and everything, and I just looked out at everyone, and I just relaxed. I'm like, oh, my God. That's right. The muscle memory kicked in, and I just gave a off-the-cuff speech like based on that framework.
Wow.
And it went great, and it was better than what I'd written down. And like, oh, that's awesome. And
so that's a skill you've carried away from this this community, right? And is everybody doing public speaking?
Yeah,
or?
Pretty much.
I can testify to that, actually. I got dragged into some Christian Sunday morning school for a few years.
Called church, yeah.
Yeah, church. I don't know. It was foreign to me. But anyway, my parents went through a divorce. So, yeah, same age from like 6 till almost 10 type idea. We did that. And, yeah, once every, 3 months, 4 months, something like that, we'd all take turns. We'd walk up in front of Sunday Mass, and we'd say a blurb from the Bible, or we'd say ambition, or we'd say something, and then we'd go on. But yeah, so I hear you. I was there.
Yeah, nice.
A little weird, but
whatever. The difference, you know.
But a good experience for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not just speaking in front of your peers in a classroom, right? It's all sorts of different people.
Yeah,
it's a real audience.
Like
you know?
It's a bunch of dressed up people.
Because like me and intern Brad, we went to Christian camp together, and they did mass and shit. What
I did not know that about you.
Yeah, we had a couple years.
They were not ready for him.
Wow. I mean,
it went fine.
Okay.
Fuck. But that I can, and I've been to. My mom's side is Catholic, on my dad's side is Protestant, and both their parents had like, they worked with the church a bit. So like, I only got like a little like radiant. Religious stuff, but I mean, I'd been to church, but we weren't practicing. We didn't say grace at meals, right? And I went to camp, and it was also a Christian camp, but I was going to camp. That was the point. And I don't think my parents were pushing the Christianity on me, so it wasn't something I grew up in. But there is an attractiveness to when people are talking, and they're talking about everybody's got one thing in common. Everybody's got one thing in common. And you know, if as long as you jump on board with this one thing, you have something in common with everybody. Mm-hmm. And if you, it's a comfortable feeling.
Mm-hmm. It's
right?
Tribalism.
It's attractive.
It's instinctual.
It's also an excuse to behave. I have this theory. That's why so many inmates find the Lord. I think that a lot of people need the rules that are bigger than them. And a lot of people have problems with that, those rules being dictated by fellow men. I get that. But when it's passed down by something that's bigger than them, it works for them for some reason, right?
Yeah. I'm going to recommend that book that I was talking about earlier because it goes into that a lot.
Go ahead, plug it away.
Jordan B. Peterson, The 12 Rules for Life. Because he made a point that I hadn't really thought of before. I was always kind of a bit of a hater on religion since I left. And like, you know, just focused on the negative sides that Christianity brought to the world. But he had a good point about how, you know, before Christianity, there was people's viewpoint of different things like greed or slavery or all that stuff were pretty skewed. They were pretty, you know, just instinctual, like, okay, having slaves is good. You're up in like society, like it's respectful, way more respectful to have than to not. And like having people getting eaten by lions and stuff for entertainment, this is all fine. And, you know, if you have more money, then you are just a better person. And then they're well, like, you know, people. What? Everyone's equal in God's eyes. And they were the first to kind of say that.
Yeah.
And so it really, and of course, all of a sudden there's hope for people who otherwise had this, you know, terrible life often, right? So it did, before it got a little corrupted and things like the Crusades happened, it was
no,
a
you're
force
right.
for...
And those are the good parts of growing up in Jehovah's Witness community, but I can imagine, like, the first thing I think of is all the hard parts. Like, you didn't have a birthday for years, right?
Wait, see, it's good to start with the good parts, right? It's just like if you're about to constructively criticize someone.
Well, and you want to let everybody know that you're not just coming out here to hate on it just because you're angry, right? Like, it's a community, it's a church, and... And churches have their good and bad
and
points.
I'm not angry anymore, you know. But I was for a long time.
Yeah. But it's a different kind of upbringing. I don't think a lot of people have much insight on and what that's like. Like it's a,
You know what? I probably know as little about Jehovah's Witnesses as I do as Scientologists. I really know like
I probably know more about Scientology.
You know, what I know I know almost nothing about either. And it's one of those shadowy.
You probably know
like,
more about like we don't have.
I never.
They base their beliefs on the Bible a bit, so at least you know that's.
Have you ever been represented on South Park?
maybe
they haven't done.
Oh
that
yeah, before. They've done J-Dub.
Briefly.
Oh, have they really?
Absolutely.
Okay, well,
I don't remember
seen
that.
Every episode,
but they get all of that out with Mormons, who are very similar.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
yeah.
They
okay.
love Mormonism. Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Yeah.
And they respect it, but they love to make fun of it because it's so easy.
Did they
to make
grow
fun
up
of.
In a Mormon town, or?
I think one of them might have been raised Mormon.
Yeah.
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 But what's that like growing up in like? Everybody else. So you're going to public school.
It gives you a.
I'm celebrating Christmas. I'm stoked.
Mm.
We're in a class together. You're not celebrating Christmas. It's not something you're stoked on.
Yeah, the thing is, like, you don't get any empathy. You have to stand out in the hall while the kids are making like Christmas toys or something, and they're not like, oh, that's cool that you're standing for your beliefs. They're like, loser. You can't. Yeah,
you're
you
different.
Suck because you
Let's
can't
get
have
them.
Christmas. Oh, thanks. Yeah, great.
Wow.
And birthdays is an annoying one because
I didn't know about that.
Yeah,
what's the reasoning?
Well, the only birthdays in the Bible were one Pharaoh that's unnamed and like King Herod, who is he was kind of an antagonist in that story.
Wasn't Jesus born in the Bible?
Yeah, but they don't say the date of his birth. That's part of the reason that
and
the apostles and Jesus never celebrated birthdays. So like that must mean God doesn't want us to celebrate birthdays.
I get it.
I still don't. I think it's lame.
But,
but you know what? I don't like birthdays much these days. I never, because I didn't have that child experience, you know, childhood
you know
experience.
I don't
See,
get really big
I'd
into
almost
them
expect,
either.
I'd almost expect you to, like, after you left the community, you'd be like, sweet, I can have a birthday. And
yeah.
I'm surprised we're not wearing hats.
I did for
like,
the first few years, and then I'm like, yeah, I just, it's not a big deal to me, though, because I didn't have that, you know, without that nostalgia, it's just not, you know, it kind of reminds me of.
Birthdays aren't
of
big.
The bad ones, like where I'm just like, oh, another day. And my mom's like, oh, hey, you're older. I'm like, yeah, cool.
you're 15 now. Yeah. See, I like celebrating my birthday, and I'm a grown fucking man, right? Like, but I like an excuse to party. I don't really like. You're more likely to get people to come out and party if it's your birthday. Let's
I
face it.
I almost like never see you on Victoria Day or VC Day. I never see you celebrate.
Nah, I
but those
Remembrance
those are like
Day.
Holidays. I mean, like, if you know, if you want like any excuse to to celebrate, then why aren't you just balling out of control for BC Day?
Because I'm working.
Yeah, fair, but you gotta work all. Yeah, okay.
Usually, I'm like, yeah, long weekends. Like, I don't usually take off. You know, can sell a lot of cars, right? But Christmas, I do up Christmas. Have you guys been to my Thanksgivings? Like, I do Thanksgiving up.
Yeah.
And then I nothing but respect for that. Like,
I like to celebrate.
Our buddy Ken, he's the Christmas man. Holy.
No, but I will. I will share
all Christmas junk so I can. I don't have to.
I will share something that was pretty cool, actually. We have my daughter, she's got a new girlfriend, and she's Jehovah Witness, the family is, and they're a lovely family and whatever. So Christmas rolls around here, and exactly that conversation comes up while she's over.
And how old are these girls?
They're 7 and 8, mm-hmm. So fairly young. And yeah, so this little girl comes up, goes, "No, it's all right. We don't get Santa Claus because we don't believe, and that's okay. That's our choice." And she just was really, really cool about it, and you could tell her parents had helped her through that in a positive way, which was actually pretty cool.
Well,
how
you
did your daughter react to that?
Fine. She just kind of went, oh, more for me.
Well, let's face it, we grew up in a community where there's a lot of people who are immigrated into BC, and some of them don't celebrate Christmas, right? Like, yeah. So that idea isn't too crazy.
Yeah, when it comes to how it makes you feel as well, you could compare it to maybe a conspiracy theory. You don't have a lot of other people believing it, so it's yours, you know, and you can own it, and it gives you a sense of power a bit.
You
and
said so that, go on.
And that kind of helps through the flip side of the coin where... Yeah. The social, you're not being very socially accepted because of it, you know.
Well, I want to be respectful, but I want to be respected, right? My daughter's very, very imaginative, and she loves losing herself. She loves to try and trap leprechauns. That's her hobby. She hunts and traps leprechauns. She hasn't been successful, but she's built countless.
A lot of people
traps.
Still believe in leprechauns.
Oh yeah, no, she's gonna catch a leprechaun.
A picture
but,
a lot of laundry.
But I want that to be respected for my daughter's youth.
Sure.
And I love that these two girls could meet minds very easily, and neither of them parted ways in a negative manner. And
I'm
it was really cool.
I'm surprised their parents are so cool that they're hanging out, like the Jehovah's Witness parents is, because one of the vibes I've gotten from you is that, like, because I met you when you were still part of the community. We met in high school, right? And it almost seems to me like they don't encourage you to socialize outside of that community.
Oh, they discourage it greatly. Which is my regret from that is, like, I think I have an okay athleticism, but I just never played sports when I was younger. I think I would have been pretty good at a lot of them.
Yeah,
just,
probably.
Isn't there some propaganda saying that, like, everybody outside of the church is, like, bad and, like, they might rub off on you? If
well, they're run by Satan, and we only run on Jehovah's software. Yeah.
So did you actually fear that effect? I mean, you know?
I bought into it.
Yeah.
Until I was about 14.
Okay.
So, but it might have been for the wrong reasons. I always had doubts, and I think everyone does. They like to deny it, but you know, it's hard not to doubt. You know, that there's a wizard in the sky, and you know that on a paradise earth, for some reason, lions are gonna become tame and like hang with your kid, like babysit for you.
Really?
Like, what? Yeah, like, what? Okay, sorry.
On their wake at watchtowers, they think that animals are all going to become tame and just go against their nature and, like,
they're not
going to
eat each other?
Yeah, it's weird.
So that's one of the... Okay, we finally hit something that sort of struck me as you seem as, like, oh, it's just what they believe. But to us, it's like, what? You know, one of the beliefs is that the animals are going to be tame for the JWs.
Yeah, after Armageddon. After we clean up the world, you know, God doesn't have got time for that, apparently. So
are
we're
the
gonna
lions
clean up the
still
world.
Gonna eat me?
How do we clean up the world?
I don't know, but think it would take.
Well, God's gonna do
a time,
flash?
And
like,
people will be resurrected gradually.
Is this like a flooding thing? Like flood them? Like destroy Solomon?
Well, they've never been terribly specific. Just end of the times.
Okay, so
thief in the night. All this stuff.
Armageddon, but on Earth, the JWs are gonna be. They're the ones that are they're the chosen people.
Yeah, we're going to watch everyone around us die and hopefully not get PTSD from it.
And the animals are going to, that's one thing, is they're going to, This sounds like Eden.
The animals
that's
are just
as silly
be
as Noah's Ark.
I think it was based, I forget where it was in the Bible. It was based on like one or two scriptures and like, oh, that'll play well with kids or something. I don't know.
Well, it does sound cool. I do want my own lion. I'm not going to lie.
Who doesn't, right?
It's amazing that these things roll through, right? Like, I mean,
yeah. Well, you drill it into people enough, and that's part of the reason they actually had meetings for 6 hours a week, about 3 days, just to keep you away from other distractions.
18 hours and a week. They were.
No. 6 hours total. So two hours each.
Oh,
time.
Okay. 6 hours. Okay.
Yeah, and then you're supposed to do at least 2 to 4 hours of service a week at the bare minimum, and
at a kid, you want to do what's right. Right, like that's your intention.
And you want to,
like,
impress your family.
And
and I had some competitive family members, so I'm like, okay, well, yeah. What are you gonna do? You're gonna do what it takes to impress your family, and that's why I was a mic boy, and I was, you know, I was up there on stage, and I was knocking on, you know, cute girls' doors.
Which is good. Which is good intention. Like, that's good. That's just a good personality type who wants to achieve and do well and go towards, you know, what they see as rising themselves up in the community. Unfortunately, the community is a little bit askew.
And I think my family is a little unique in this. Like, I was extra Jehovah's Witness because both on my mom's side and my dad's side, it goes back to the early 20th century.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. Wait, how long has this been going on?
Since like late 19th century.
Okay.
And so you were like Charles Russell was starting to get popular. And yeah, my
Who's Charles Russell? Great Charles Russell.
I was just going to say.
Not great, great, but my great-grandmother... was religious from like an early age.
No kidding.
And then on my other side, my my great grandfather on my dad's side, I didn't know this until recently because I was able to actually hang out with my dad for the first time in years, and I wanted to know a little bit more about my family history. And he's like, "Yeah, your great granddad had a bit of Polish in him. He came over here. I didn't know I had any Polish in me, and he was a full on entertainer on the grand piano,
really,
bluesy, jazzy, all that stuff.
Oh, wow.
Like,
oh,
your great-grandfather?
So yeah.
Wow.
I'm like, that's where I got it, I guess. Like, because I've never really known where I had got the musicality from. Like, there's not many people in my family who are that into music.
Hmm.
So that was interesting to know. But anyways, I didn't know that it went that far back on my dad's side as well. I'm like, holy crap. So much of my extended family is hardcore in this religion. And so when I ended up getting disfellowshipped, I lost a lot of family, but this, you know, it's led to a lot of tough.
How old were you when you left? When you really left? Because you consider, I'm sure you didn't do it just one day. You considered it over time.
Yeah, it was shortly before I turned 17.
You started having questions at 14. You said.
Well, yeah, and the ironic thing is, you know, I started having doubts. Earlier than that, 12, you know, as soon as you become a teenager, your brain just destroys itself repeatedly. And
you start to question everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You're supposed to question everything at that point.
Exactly. Rebellion is healthy at that point. And
yep.
And so I'm like, oh, but, you know, I want to make this work. So I'm going to work on being baptized, which is the goal. And, you know, some of my cousins were getting baptized.
Work on getting baptized?
Yeah. It's not just a decision you make. You got to go and service a lot and put more effort in, and then you do a...
So you got
to
qualify.
You have to fucking earn it.
You got to qualify to be to be baptized.
And then you have a meeting with the elders, and they ask you, like, are you committed to God and everything like this? And I said yes, and I convinced myself I was. And that I would spend my life on this, and then I remember was there
a certain event, or was there something that happened?
They have conventions every year.
Yeah,
worst.
I meant for you to start having your questions. Was there like a moment in time when you're just like, wait, this kind of seems like bullshit?
Yeah, as soon as I got up out of the water, I'm like, oh fuck, nothing's changed. I'm like,
wow,
you got baptized, you finally qualified, you spent your whole life kind of thinking
inspiration from it too, and I convinced myself it's what I wanted, and then
kind of like a bar mitzvah.
Once I got baptized, I'm like, oh shit, that's not what I wanted. Like, you know, that's a dramatic way of putting it, but right away it's like, oh no, you know, maybe it'll take just a little while to set in or something, and then over the next 2 years, the doubts just got bigger and bigger, and I'm just like, I can't do this anymore, and so I started smoking. And drinking might have happened anyways. Yeah. And I'm like, I was sick and tired of seeing so many youth in, you know, who would, once you, if you get reproved for something, they publicly reprove you because, you know, shame is a powerful tool. And they, and if you do something like smoking or adultery or whatever, or any kind of sex, smoking out of marriage, they bring you in and they're like, okay, are you repentant? And then you might get a public reproval as long as you're repentant.
But you're,
but
you're,
I wasn't repentant.
And you come out in front of everybody and say it though.
Like, they say it after.
What? Oh, okay.
They say it after. So I'm like, yeah, I just want out of this.
So who did you talk to? Did you talk to your priest or your family, or how did you say, like?
I talked to my friends and I smoked and drank with them, and it was good.
Like me or like Jehovah's Witness friends? I'm.
Well,
like,
you know, my friends in high school were a big influence on that. Like, mm-hmm. especially, you know, with Dan and
by me,
and
I
Matt.
Don't mean you're like people that you knew in high school, right? Like outside of the community.
Yeah, I hung out with them more and more, and I saw that life outside of religion was really a lot better. And, you know, and I actually experienced what freedom of thought is like, you know, challenging opinions and changing beliefs, and it felt great.
Is there any like formal process, or do you just stop going?
Yeah, I stopped going a bit, and I was smoking, and eventually I got busted after a year of smoking. And I remember the guy, an old father figure of mine, let's call him Martin because that's his first name. He's just like, oh, we're at an assembly. He's like, we're going to have to talk. I'm like, okay, I guess this day was coming. And then they all expected me to lie and say that I was sorry and everything.
Wait, where was this?
That was an assembly where you know, big auditorium.
But like a church.
If you'd already.
Well, for lack of a better term? Or?
It's out in Surrey. There's a huge hall.
If you already basically decided that you quit, you were still going?
I think you were in limbo at this point.
Yeah, okay. I was kind of like falling off that.
But enough that you had an assembly and they wanted you to repent.
You were paying lip service, but you were still sinning?
Yeah, I was paying lip service a bit and kind of transitioning into a different kind of life. And, you know, I definitely regret getting baptized because you can't get his fellowship if you aren't baptized. And I went into all of this in an email. I hadn't really opened up to my parents about it before. Since I was disfellowshipped, I've just, you know, I just never brought up the religion ever because there's one thing to be disfellowshipped. I mean, you're going to die at Armageddon, all this yada, yada, yada. But apostasy is seen as way worse, and that's where you speak out against the religion. That's why I didn't talk to my...
Mm-hmm.
Never. I talked to friends about it, but I never talked to my family about it. I never brought it up once in the years, like many years after. And because I could still talk to my immediate family. My extended family, it's been since I was 17. I've barely seen them. And so, yeah, I went into the thing with my mom, just an office kind of thing, a back room, and or a second. It's a room where they kind of have little Bible studies and such.
Mm-hmm.
With I believe it was three elders. And
feels like judgment.
It is, and
of
they
course. Yeah,
and they're just like, so you're smoking? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, are you gonna quit smoking? I'm like, yeah, I think so eventually. And they're like, that's not what they're, you know, they're used to. I hated the hypocrisy
crumbling.
Of kids, you know, who'd have sex or do this or that. And then they bring him in and like, I'm so sorry. I'll stop doing it for God. I'm like, I'm not going to lie like that.
Yeah.
And they're like, but why are you going to quit? I'm like, because of health reasons.
But that's not
like,
the right
but
answer.
Is that the only reason? And I'm like, yes.
Oh.
And so my mom burst into tears, and then one of the elders burst into tears because they had all these. They didn't expect that.
So that was meant to be.
But
a jab.
I wasn't going to live that lie anymore.
Yeah. Oh,
but that was an act of rebellion.
Good.
That
for
the
you.
Way you were answering your questions was your, no. This is my stand. This is mm-hmm. where I'm going to make my stand. I've got everybody here.
Yeah, and it felt good to like to cut myself off from something that I had been working so hard to try and believe, but just couldn't fully.
And your mom's there. That's
but
tough.
Did you still live with your
parents
when that happened?
Yeah, and I always feel bad about how this makes my mom feel because she's a very emotional lady and, you know, she's not usually nothing but love. And so it's got to be hard on her. She really stresses a lot too. But I can't really do much about that anymore. I felt guilty about that for a while and everything. But it's only recently where I've been making all these changes in my life and I'm just like, you know, that's really holding me back. Why am I feeling guilty for that anymore? And so the best way to get out of that, I wrote him an email, a big long, because I wrote him emails from time to time. They never got back to me, but this one I'm just
you're,
like,
you're okay. You're writing them. That's your family, your parents.
Yeah, my
your mom?
Yeah. They, yeah. A few years ago, around the time my grandpa died, they cut me off completely. I think the hall was getting very the elders and stuff were probably ragging on them for seeing me, because I saw them as often as I could. I'd go once a month, and my sister had she got married, and I went to the wedding and as a disfellowship person, and I saw my niece and nephew start as they're growing up, but then then they just cut me off randomly.
So you saw you went to your sister's wedding and you started to see her build a family.
Yeah, and I was, it was nice to at least keep up with them and learned about how the extended family was doing, because I hadn't seen them in so long. And it was funny because they don't talk well about people. Like, as soon as I was this fellowship, I'm like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to lead a really good life just to show how good life can be outside of this religion. Because all the disfellowship stories I'd hear, they just bring out the negative, like, oh, they're look what happened to them. Because often cutting people off of their family, that's a brutal thing to do.
And people can let them.
Yeah, and I was lucky enough to have a lot of really high quality friends from high school that I still see all the time.
You do. You have a great circle of friends.
Yeah, and they became my family. They had already started becoming my family before I did this. And so that was great. I moved in with my buddy in the coach house, and it was like the party house, and it was great. It was awesome.
Yeah, I remember that.
So much fun those few years. Oh, man. And
and you found yourself.
Yeah.
That's probably the time.
I started to find myself.
Because we all find ourselves in that late teenage years where we're, becoming young men. Mm-hmm. And you're going through the same process we're going through, and you're kind of breaking off on my own. I think like me moving out when I was 19 was like a time when but you didn't just move out. You spread wings and flew away in a sense. And you knew how that was perceived by that family and all the people around, but you went and did it anyways.
I didn't have a choice really. I couldn't live that life anymore. And that's what I really don't like about the religion, is that they just assume that it's going to work for everyone. And then using family is a pretty shitty way to try to keep people in. And I think they could do some things differently and, keep the good parts of the religion going. But like getting rid of this shaming, and there's been cases since of I don't want to bring them up on the podcast, but like some disfellowshippings where it ruined the person's life. And
I'll talk to one. I grew up with a kid, Chris, Shane, whatever, and his parents, she was devout, J-Dub, and he wasn't, and it always was a hardship for them, and, growing up, it was no doubt about it, that's what caused them to split. The church was going to take care of her, and the church made it very, very hard for them to exist as a couple. And it finally broke the couple, and Chris was part of a divorcee family, and he had no qualms about blaming the church for that. He was absolutely,
yeah.
They drove my mom crazy, just absolutely crazy against my dad, and that was the reality of it.
Yeah, there is a lot of realities like those in there, but they really try to sweep it into shadow. Mm-hmm. But that leads to, I always found, and I've always hated, maybe that's partly why, I've always hated any kind of gossip, and you'd always have the word on the street about who's doing what around the hall.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Keeping everybody accountable, basically, to the group. You're not being accountable to yourself, you're being accountable to the group. You're not being a good person because you think that, like, not stealing is a good thing to do. You don't want to be called out, right?
But, it makes for people being really friendly to each other all the time, which is... It's nice, that's nice.
Smiling in the face is not the same.
But some of it was genuine, because it attracted a certain type of person. But I think that, they do get into the personal lives too much. Like if you divorce and then remarry, that's a big no-no.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, God says once. Yeah. And if you divorce, they discourage most
divorces. So they're not against
divorce?
Unless
there's abuse. or full on adultery. You know, if you two are just not meant for each other, well, too bad. But God is sewn together and that no choices. One put apart or whatever.
Do you guys have that same dynamic where, like, if somebody else does something bad, you're encouraged to rat them out, not just so
it's worse for you if you don't rat them out than for them.
Not just because, like, you'll win their favor, but if they find out you didn't say anything, then you're
in greater trouble than them, and they bring up scriptures for that, and like I said, they're very smart.
So there
about
was
psychology.
Like mistrust and like backstabbing.
So you and me were JWs, and I'm like, hey Joel, I've been fucking stealing cigarettes from the pastor, and you're like, why did you tell me that? Like you, I don't know.
Whatever you got.
That'd be more the pastor's problem than yours. He's smoking.
I'm stealing.
Look
period.
Where, look where smoking got me.
I'm stealing. It's one of the Ten Commandments, so I'm sure that one's a good one, right? I'm stealing. I've been stealing money from like whatever for a while, and I tell you, like, I got all this money I stole. Hey, check it out. Now, you would be in more trouble than me for just keeping my secret.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a good tactic for.
That's a great tactic.
I understand that's pretty par for the course when it comes to religions.
Scientology.
There, is some scriptures that kind of hint at that in the Bible.
Which Bible is this?
Call it the New World Translation. I think it was made in the 40s or 30s or so.
Yeah. I've basically heard of like King James Version, like Old Testament. Like, I don't know anything about it. But yours is the New World.
It was one of the first kind of. I think it was one of the first kind of Bibles that. Put things in more plain English, which is a good thing that way. But they replace everything like God with Jehovah quite often. Not just in the Old Testament and where it was Yahweh.
Yahweh or no way?
Yeah, man. But there's some contention over the guy who wrote it, like not knowing Latin. You know, there's a book called Crisis of Conscience, which for some reason I still haven't read it. I guess I don't know. I just like avoiding thinking about the religion. These days I'm more.
Yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah.
That's you know what it's the kind of thing that I've asked you some questions about in the time that I've known you about. You know, it's come up that you were in that community. One thing that was actually kind of interesting that you said to me is that growing up, when you're kind of like trying to find a way to rationalize how. Your family just does things differently, right? You know, the whatever, the holidays, everything. But you're like, well, for a while, I'm sure you were brought up. You were kind of like, I'm going to use an insensitive term, brainwashed. Mm-hmm. And you're like, we know something they don't. And you said that to me, and I thought it was an interesting perspective because you're like, growing up, you just kind of figured like, oh, these guys are stupid. They believe in fucking Santa Claus, like idiots. Like that's
like putting the other people down and like telling people in your propaganda that you guys are the best and you're better than them. And that's like so common to the military. I mean, like any cult.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, they did their research. Military when they cult were making these rules.
Here.
Oh my God, the military. Yeah, that there's aspects of that are cultish. I'm sorry, I don't mean to.
Oh no, like, yeah, there is a lot of cultish aspects. But yeah, when I. The annoying thing is that I did try to keep religion out of it. Like, if there's any young Jehovah's Witnesses out there, there's a lot of good resources online from like elders, former elders who feel really guilty about, you know, what they
who's
did.
Who's the Leah Remini of the movement? You know, like who's the outspoken celebrity?
They really never try to focus on any one person. In fact. It's ran by what they call a governing body, and it's kind of shrouded in secrecy, which, you know, really doesn't make it seem evil.
No, I mean, not from the church side, but from, like, the somebody who's left, like, saying the story. Like, there's that girl that left the Westboro Baptist Church, and now she's, like, doing interviews and telling her side of the story. There's, you know, blowing the whistle on it, and Leah Remini with the Scientology. Mm. Is there any, like, poster person for...
No, but I think there's some good... I don't know the actual name of them. There's subreddits out there and there's websites. Yeah. And the elder is the one that the elder made. We can put it maybe on the website link.
Yeah,
I'll find
we can put it up there. Yeah.
He's got really good advice for kids, you know, like if you want out, you got to kind of pretend that you want to stay in because you can't do shit until you're 18. But just never get baptized. And a good way to not get baptized, even though you're getting pressure to usually around before you're 18, I wonder why, you just say, well, I don't feel ready, and I wanna just learn more about it
to
first.
To look like a keener, but also yeah. drag your feet.
Yeah, and then yeah. you can just, when you're 18, be like, you know what, I'm moving out, and I'm not really into this, but we can still hang out because I'm not disfellowship. You know, I wish I could have taken steps like that.
You
for
made
me,
more...
it's been like, you know, smoking cigarettes made me lose my whole family in a sense.
Yeah.
But it would have been something silly. Else. It was the catalyst.
I'd rather it would have been sex, but, you know, I wasn't a player.
You weren't getting laid.
Yeah, that old father figure caught you having sex, and you had an uncomfortable conversation in front of the congregation.
Well, not in front of the congregation.
What okay.
Yeah.
So I feel
but
like
they announce it afterwards, and then they'll do like a talk about it.
Wow.
Without saying names, but they'll be like, well, this is why this is bad, okay?
And so. He was using a condom as well?
But yeah, it was weird, like, when my grandpa got sick. I loved my grandpa. He's a great guy. The kind of guy, like, who had 7 kids, but he was, like, he was the last guy out when doing explosives in mines, and, like, he was doing ice logging it, like, over lakes where, you know.
Like ice road truckers.
Through the ice. Yeah, just, but way more hardcore.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, but he, when he got, when he kind of got ill and, all the family, you know, 7 kids, like I said, and they all have kids. There's a lot of people.
And they're all Jovies.
Or most of them have kids. Yeah, they're all Jovies. Every single one. And they're all there, and they hadn't seen me in like a decade, some of them. And I remember, and I was visiting him quite often and out in Langley Hospital there, and I just go down the stairs, and my uncle and aunt saw me, and they just froze in fear and terror, like, you know. I don't know what
devil?
They thought. Because, sorry?
Because yeah, you're the devil,
well,
yeah.
You know, yeah, pretty much.
You're tainted.
I'll never forget that expression. They're just like, oh my God. Like,
oh no, like the scene of Bear.
Oh, the black sheep. And
because you've been talked about since you've been gone, basically. Is
yeah. And yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, whatever. But we all went out for lunch and had a great conversation. And like, oh man, you know, we miss you and everything, you know. But that initial reaction was very telling.
Well, you become more of a story. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, you've been gone for a decade, you said. You've become more of, they've forgotten you, and now you're this example.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The thing is, you talk about a lot of the people, what did you call it? Somebody who left?
Disfellowshipped, pretty much.
Disfellowshipped, yeah. Okay.
Excommunicated is more
the Catholic
more syllable,
version,
so,
yeah. But, and you're not a bad example, because you're not a junkie or a
I made
bum
a point
or
of it to make a good life out of it. And so at the very least, they just maybe don't talk about me because I'm not really giving them much ammo if they want to talk about how it's bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I was doing well. I was helping the family out here and there and stuff. And so it was a little awkward when they cut me off. And
well, you know what? It's your actions that you're responsible for. You're not responsible for their actions. And I think that you're smart enough to know the difference to the fact that if they cut you off, even though you were an influence, they're doing it for the wrong reasons. And it's a shame. It's really because...
Yeah, I've always thought that or I'd go back, but I've never been like, I regret making that decision.
Mm-hmm.
What I regret is getting baptized. And, you know, making a big decision like that, I don't think anyone's equipped to do when they're 14 fucking years old. So
they're not equipped to do it like... 6 months old either, but
yeah.
It's happened.
And I brought that up in the email. I'm just like, okay, I was 14 when I made this, and I, you know, I kept referring to this bad decision as not as my 16-year-old disfellowship. It was like the baptism kind of thing.
See, that seems more, and it's funny because of the culture you grew up in, the baptism means more to you than it would to me, because I don't think I've ever been baptized. I don't know if I was. If I found out I was baptized when I was a baby, I don't know if I'd care that much, but it wasn't built up while I was growing up, right? This is something that's got meaning, like strength and weight to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not something that, yeah, you're just not old enough at that age.
And it's interesting that that's the catalyst. That's because you said that's when you came out of the water and all of a sudden you're like, nothing's different. I've been waiting for this so that something would click, and it's not clicking.
And yeah, and they build it up your whole life kind of thing.
Well, you know what? Thanks for sharing all that. That's a very interesting sort of like, perspective to a culture that, again, we're not, this isn't about hating on that culture, but it's an insight, and you've left it, and I think you might be better off without it, to be honest.
Oh, I certainly am. There's no doubt in my mind on that. And yeah, like I said, once I got over the kind of guilt aspect of it, which is what they, it's manufactured guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Once I realized that, I'm a lot better for it. And yeah, it's just made me, I probably would have, you know, if I was never born religious, I'd probably have less friends. I've always, you know, cultivated friendships and made them very important to me.
That's true. You seem to feel a lot for your friends, and you would help a lot of your friends in a good way. You're a good friend to have if you're lucky enough to have you as a friend. But I guess when you lack a little bit of that family element, your friends fill that void that's left when you're kind of cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And people say you can't choose your family, so sometimes you just got to move on from the entire one. No, no, I'm kidding. No, but I still do love my family, and I love, you know, it's just unfortunate, the circumstances, and there's not really much I can do about it at this point. So, but, you know, you're thanking me for talking about it here, but it's, you know, it's a very, there's some selfishness in it too, because it feels really good to open up about it now. I used to just avoid talking to it about it much, and I wouldn't have imagined talking about it on a podcast, because I always kind of held some false hope in my mind that maybe something would fix it. But for now, that's just not the case.
But you were raised to think that, what did you call it? Somebody who spoke out against the religion was a
apostate.
So that's been given a label like that.
Yeah.
And you
go to the lake of fire. They don't really describe it much, but it's Gehenna. It doesn't sound pleasant, but you know,
but you're not hating on but you're speaking openly about your experience, but even that feels like a little bit of that. You're not supposed to do it.
Yeah. And that feels good. Cause otherwise I'm not honoring myself and I'm not being honest. So I'm trying to be more honest and, most areas of my life, and this is one of the biggies. So,
and I want to thank you for letting me ask all my questions, because it's been something I've wondered a lot about, but I can tell that you got some reservations about talking about it. So, you know, you don't want to bombard somebody about their, you know, if you feel like it's not kind of a thing, because it doesn't matter. Like, everybody who knows you doesn't care how you were raised. They like you for the piano playing mess that you are, Joel Nato. But it is a part of you. And sometimes I forget. Sometimes I forget that, like, you grew up just a little bit different than me. I mean, you had a family and you grew up, but, like, you know, there were certain things that I don't realize how much they had an effect on my development growing up till I hear somebody who didn't have the same.
And the best way that I've dealt with it, so again, like, for anyone out there who is in it, I'll have that website to kind of look for a way to get out, but The having the freedom to shape your own life is far more important than anything, and especially in this day and age. Like, and to not feel bad about my youth, I just think about all the really good things that it actually helped me with. It made me a lot more independent, and maybe a little more stubborn. And it made me, but it also made me be able to change my beliefs quickly, because my whole belief system, my entire youth, I was able to. You know, I just realized the false kind of source and was changing that. If I can change those beliefs, I can change any beliefs. And I think it's important to realize, to get to the ground floor of your beliefs and realize where they actually come from. And so that's going to be a project for the rest of my life. But I think I've got an edge on that because of that major kind of...
And like Joel said, if there's anybody out there from a community that's Jehovah's Witness or a similar type community and they want to read any of the literature, it'll be in the episode notes on the website, and we'll post it again on our Facebook page. So if anybody is coming from a situation that sounds similar to what Joel's coming through and they want something to help them explore those thoughts and ideas, we'll put it up there for you.
And you know what? I still have a lot to say about it too, so next podcast we could probably go into it a bit as well, right?
Fuck, you know, that's some heavy shit for the podcast, but I love it. I actually we do a lot of joking around and like fart jokes and shit on this, but it's nice to have something. I've learned a lot in this episode, and I appreciate you bringing it on, like I said.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
well, thank you guys.
Why don't we end this episode off with a little bit of Mary Fuck Kill, just to lighten it up. It's been a while since we pulled that out. Hey,
yeah.
If you were gonna Mary Fuck Kill
political women.
Wait, no, listen to me here.
Oh.
A ham sandwich.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, this is perfect.
A BLT. Mm-hmm. And a meatball sub. Marry, fuck, kill.
Wait, what's the first two again? I know the last one's meatball because I already chose, so I'm going to marry.
Did I say ham sandwich? I think I said ham sandwich. I'm getting kind of drunk.
This you said club?
And then I said BLT.
Okay, ham sandwich, BLT, and meatball sub.
Meatball
so
sub.
Does the guest go first? Is how does this work?
Go first.
Yeah, you know what? All go. Right.
Well, definitely fuck the meatball sandwich because it's the hottest.
Yes.
Sloppy and dirty.
It's not going to stay hot forever.
It's warm. It's warm and it's wet.
I'm not marrying that. Yeah.
Dude, that's a wet sandwich. You want to... Yes.
Yeah.
Are you going to fuck
that shit?
That
would be the most fuckable of them.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who do you marry? Who do you marry?
Oh, yeah. I got to start with the marry. The BLT. It's got, you know, a good variety. And bacon lasts, you know...
Bacon is forever.
It's smoked. It's, you know... Yeah, it keeps its flavor for a while.
So you're
And then ham sandwich, I've never been a huge fan. So, yeah, I'll just
ham sandwich dies.
Feed him to the dog. Feed him to the pig, Zary.
I don't know. I'm a big fan of the ham sandwich. I think I'm going to marry that one because I think it'd be a good foundation.
But you're a plain kind of
plain
food guy.
Jane kind of stable wife of a sandwich she'd be. So we know I'd fuck the sub, and I guess that means I'm killing a BLT.
Once again, I got to go with Jeff. He's nailed it.
I've thought
about this. Marry the ham sandwich.
You know, I don't know how you pick the three things that I've already thought about.
Okay, Trevor.
Oh, me? Oh, you know what? You guys are crazy. I'm marrying the meatball sub, okay?
Oh, so you can hit it every day, even when it gets cold on you.
Fuck, you know what?
I guess
even when it gets old.
Even when it gets cold on you.
You know what? It's just, the microwaves are for. It's just right up my alley, meatball sub.
It's going to dry up eventually, you know that.
Not when I...
No, that marinara is going to get thick.
I'll keep it wet. And then, I'm not going to fuck a ham sandwich. I mean, there's just something about that I can't do. So I'm probably killing the ham sandwich.
Yeah.
I'm going to fuck the BLT. The BLT is sexy and like everywhere.
Oh, no, the texture, right? though. There's a bunch of different textures in there.
I like the crispy.
Just the tomato.
The bacon,
yeah, the crispy. I don't know what like dick on bacon feels like.
I think the BLT is like a basic white girl. The BLT is the basic white girl, which let's face it, that's where I've hooked up the most is basic white girls. So, yeah. BLT, I'm fucking the BLT.
For the win.
I never knew you wanted to marry a... Oh, you're fucking the BLT. Yeah, exactly.
No. Michelle is my meatball sub.
There you go.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, it's okay. She doesn't listen, I think.
So you're not upset that we just said we wanted to fuck it?
You know what? I'm flattered, frankly.
You know what? You should tell her I said that. That's like a compliment, right?
She'd be touched. Actually, it would mean a lot to her.
I'm
going to
tell Michelle that if she was a meatball sub that I'd fuck her.
Could you?
She's 3 out of 3 approved.
3 out of 3, 100%. Just 3 out of 3. Wait, no, 4 out of 4. I'm down too. Like I married the sub.
No, you were gonna marry her. We're just gonna fuck her.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
And wait, you were gonna kill her?
No, wait, I was gonna fuck her.
Yo, we're all gonna okay.
I think the ham sandwich like pretty much has to die.
Shut up! That's my wife. I didn't kill my wife.
I'm almost glad that was loud.
It had the intended effect, I think.
All right. Well, I think, you know what? This has been a really fun episode, and I think we're going to play this out to the end, and I'm going to play it out to a little band I've been listening to lately called The Dead South. They're not country, but they're whatever. Anyways, check out our website, ineverwanttobeyoungagain.com, where all of our episodes are free. You can download the Stitcher app, and I encourage you to. And then download our podcast or subscribe. I Never Want to Be Young Again podcast. Facebook at I Never Want to Be Young Again podcast. And thank you for listening. See you all next week. I'm going to let this play like real long. Those Keeners.
Wow, you know, like that started off by like lightening the mood and like just made me hungry.